Our guest today has written a book. The book is called Broken. Our guest is Leon R. Walker, Jr. And this is a story of his youth and his deeply rooted demons. It's a gripping tale of a lost and damaged kid that will take you on a powerful, emotional, and intense roller coaster ride. As a black kid growing up in East Cleveland, Leon was surrounded by more trauma and pain than most people will ever experience in their entire life. Broken is a powerful testimony of how one man refused to let his childhood traumas define his future. Leon will also be sharing his story and spreading his message of hope, encouragement, and inspiration. Leon is a 32-year decorated naval veteran with more than 11 deployments to the Persian Gulf and other areas of conflict throughout the world. He sailed the seas for 15 years on 5 different naval vessels as a Navy instructor, recruiter, and company commander. He was trained, qualified, and trusted to lead thousands of sailors during his career. He and his sailors received numerous awards and accolades. He is a well-spoken and articulate mentor, teacher, and motivational speaker. And his love and passion are people from all over the world and all walks of life. So we're going to talk with Leon today, and we're not going to get too much into him telling you details of his horrible situation that he came up with in life, but he might relate some of this to you. But the point is, no matter where you come from, you can make a change in your life, and we're going to find out how Leon did that. And so without any more prelims, let's talk to Leon in Broken. Hi, Leon.
Hi, good morning. How are you today?
Good. You got a little background scratchiness. Can you clear that up for me?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that I hear what you have to say because it's very important. Because your early years in Cleveland were so critical to you getting to where you are now, why don't you just capsulize, don't go into detail, but capsulize some of the things that you were exposed to as a kid.
Okay, the things that I was exposed to as a child, things that no kid should ever see or hear or discuss or even be around, you know, violence, disrespect, verbal abuse, mental abuse. I didn't even know about the mental abuse until probably when I was maybe 18 or 19, reading my mother and father's divorce decree. I had no idea that my mother was going through mental abuse. You know, divorce decrees come in various types, irreconcilable difference, and so forth. But when I saw the term mental abuse, it shook me to my core, and it hurt my feelings because I didn't know what. I knew my mother had been beat, and I witnessed that. I've witnessed, you know, like I say, the verbal abuse, mental abuse, but I didn't know what it was until I decided to join the Navy. And in the Navy, when you're trying to join, if your parents are divorced, you have to present the divorce decree. So aside from presenting it, I read it. And that's what really broke my heart, knowing that my mother was mentally abused. We lost our home, so I dealt with homelessness. I dealt with major dysfunction, my inability to learn and focus in elementary school because of what had happened to me. And that went on into junior high school and high school. And then all into my adult life school because I was never diagnosed with anything, but I knew I had some issues. I just didn't know what they were, and I didn't know how to overcome them. So those are the things that I dealt with and that rocked me to my core. Bedwetting was a major part of my elementary childhood. I was wet in bed every day from kindergarten to sixth grade because of fear. Because of I love my dad and I love my mother, and I knew they would fight and argue, but I was afraid of my father. He was a big guy. He was strong. He was part of the army. And when he'd come home, I'd just be terrified because I didn't know what could happen. I know if he would come home drunk, because he was a drinker and he ultimately died as an alcoholic, but I feared a lot of things, and I was unable to be a cool, calm kid. I was unable to enjoy myself as a child because my parents had so much going on. It took my focus away from, wanting to play football or basketball or baseball, even wanting to read books. So I found solace in animals. But those are the things that I pretty much experienced as a child, an abundance of things. And it took me on a dark, deep path.
Leon, one of the other things that you had in your childhood, and I bring it up because it's a problem that continues to this day in every neighborhood in the country, not just, in the inner city. But you were the victim of sexual abuse, were you not?
I sure was. Yes. On a few occasions. The first occasion, I'm not going to get into detail, but I'll mention it, was the first grade. I was 5 years old, and people think that a child has to be 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old or starting to develop or fully develop for an older person or even an adult to be attracted to a child. That's not the case. If it's something that they want to do, they're going to do it. And I just happened to be that kid in my house with my, cousins, and that was the first incident. Second incident was the incident with my babysitter, somebody that my mother and father trusted to have me in their care, and it didn't go that way. Again, it was something that she may have been dealing with in her home. It's something that may have happened to her that she, for some reason, she saw something in me and wanted to take it out on me. Regardless if it was something to take out on me from an anger standpoint or something that made her feel good, she did that to me. And then, there was a male member of my family that decided to do things to me as well. So it was three incidents that went on through my childhood, through all the way through elementary school, starting the first grade, and things happened off and on until the sixth grade.
Okay, so tell the audience what you learned from and how what you learned can help them if they have been a victim of sexual abuse.
First thing is to make sure that, I'm going to tell you, for anybody that's listening, young men, young women, you are not alone. It's crucial that you tell someone what's going on, what's happening. Even if someone as simple as makes an inappropriate remark to you, if you don't report that remark, if you don't report the inappropriateness of that, that person is saying whatever they're saying to you is going to think that you're okay with it. They're going to think that you're agreeing with what they're saying. So they're going to continue to go on and on. They're going to continue to press forward. And then what's going to happen is it's going to go from one level of intensity to the next. So you have to tell people. You have to report it. I don't care if it's the local police department, the fire department, if it's the neighbor, if it's one of your teachers. If you have that rapport with your parents, you need to tell the superintendent, the principal, anybody that's around, that's near you, that is willing to listen and help, even if they're not willing to listen and help, let somebody know. Because if you don't, you're giving the perpetrator an open door to continue to do what he or she wants to do. And don't think that it's just men that do these things to kids. It's women, too. So don't think there's just little girls that are being affected by these incidents. It's just little boys, too. So these people that are doing these things need to be reported. You need to let somebody know. Don't hold it in, because what happened to me is that you hold it in, you may not move forward and repeat these actions, but you may repeat these actions through anger, through verbal abuse, through mental abuse. You're going to become an upset young man or young lady throughout the rest of your life. And if you don't get help, you don't know how to process it, it's going to take over your life. It's going to consume your life. It's going to prevent you from trying to learn. You won't be able to concentrate in school. These are all the things that I went through, and I held this in for 45 years.
One of the things that I want to say is that too many of the victims of sexual abuse, for for one reason or the other, think that it's their fault. And as a result of that, they have a low self-esteem. They don't value themselves as much as they should. And since low self-esteem is the cause of addictive behaviors, which I've been working with for over 30 years, I see this as a point that you need to bring out and tell people it was not your fault. Right?
Right. So, no, it was not my fault. And I like to use this old saying that other people's opinion of you does not have to be your reality. Their opinion might be, like, oh, she likes me, or he likes me, or they want me to talk to him, or they want me to come over. It's not your fault. Don't ever take the blame for what someone else done to you. Do not take that blame, because as soon as you start taking the blame, you become not only a victim, but a victimized, you become susceptible to anything that they want to do or say to you. In fact, they have that control over your mind for many, many, many years. That happened to me as well. The fact that they had that control over my mind is because I thought that I did something wrong. I was afraid to tell. I didn't want to cause problems in the family. I didn't want them to get in trouble. But I put it all on me. I took it all on my shoulders. And some people are not that strong. Luckily, I was a little bit stronger, you know, to take those things on, because I fought so much as a young child. It made me cold. It made me hard on the inside. So I was able to deflect a lot of things. So it affected me, but I was able to maintain my lifestyle and stay around and, you know, become a decent young man, a decent citizen. So never think that it's your fault. Never think that you have anything to do with it. The first thing you want to do is tell someone. And that's going to open up your mind for the rest of your life, because a lot of people keep things inside. They're afraid to tell because of retaliation. They're afraid to tell because, your mother, father may get mad at you, which happens. I've seen videos of little girls telling their mother that, you know, so-and-so did this or did that to him, and the mother turns on him. That's what caused a lot of people to remain inside and have that fear of not wanting to tell or move forward with it. But the thing is, it's never your fault. You have to be careful. Here's the key thing. You have to be careful, because if you take it on thinking that's your fault, the things that have been done to you, you may start repeating that later on in life. So you have to be very careful with that. Look out for your own good.
Leon, you sent me some questions, which I reviewed, and one of them I probably would have not brought up if you hadn't asked, but the negative stereotypes of black men and women in the United States, and how these stereotypes that came from the 70s that you're familiar with are still prevalent today. Could you speak on that?
I can. A lot of it comes from, and I think it's from reading up on, you know, different topics, whether it be slavery, whether it be, you know, how the Jewish people were treated and almost abolished and things like that, concentration camps. It comes from us still being angry. It comes from us thinking and believing what other people think and believe about us, instead of, as black people, you know, black people are very loving people. They're very harmonious people. Even in the slavery days, even picking cotton, we sang in the fields while we picked cotton. Black people are not taking anything from whites or Puerto Ricans or Mexicans. Black people are strong, very strong-willed people, so much that we have a tendency to damage our own people. We have a tendency to damage our own kind. We have a tendency to stab each other in the back. And, you know, the thing about, there's a book I read about by Dr. Ryan Leaf about, you know, who unlocked my brain and things like that, and not repairing the blood cells that we have in our bodies, not repairing them. So therefore, when we do have children, when we do bear children, we pass those angry issues down through our bloodstream, and we never fix them, simply because we don't forgive enough, because of the anger and the past is so deeply rooted in our generations. We don't take the time out to even realize how loving we are and how caring we are and how forgiving we are. So we carry those stereotypes forward. And the first thing we do when somebody reminds us of a stereotype, we get upset instead of not believing it. I'm the type of person, a lot of things change with me, and when I stopped believing what other people were saying about me, what other people were feeling about me, that all changed me when I stopped believing what I was telling myself. I'm not a slave. I'm not cocky. I'm not arrogant. I'm not angry. But if you continue to believe those things, the moment somebody says something to you that reminds you about stereotypes, You're going to get upset. And when you get upset, you get angry, you feel the heat all through your body. The first thing you want to do is lash out. But as African Americans, we've been angry for so long, it's time to stop being angry. You know, we take on this stereotype thing. We take on these numbers by being a minority and being drug dealers and being, you know, pimps and hustlers, that we sometimes glorify it. And we forget that we're created equal. Just like any other human being, we're created equal with a brain, a mind, a heart, to be, you know, to be upright, strong, standing citizens. So we don't pay attention to the things that are mainly closely related to God as far as how he created us. We get away from that too much, and we start getting into the stereotypical things and believing that they're true, and they're not. Of course we do things that people say we do. Other races do the same thing, but we hold that too close to our heart, and it's the anger that we haven't gotten over, you know, through slavery or through divorce or through the system that they say the white man is against us. I don't believe that. You can be against anybody in life. It doesn't have to be a specific race. But as long as you believe that, the first thing you think is the first thing that African Americans think when they get around white people is that, oh, he's out to get me, or he or she doesn't like me, or they're going to fire me, or they think bad of me. Those negative thoughts will come through your conversation. It'll come through your body language. So that's what I, you know, when I talk about that, it's something that we carried forward, and we carried it forward too long.
Well, thank you for giving us that insight. Now I want to go into the most important chapter of your book, which is the last chapter, the conclusion. And I'm gonna read you some things and let you fill in the blanks for me. You said, out of all those years of attending church, I had no clue what it was about, nor did I pay attention. I did know, however, that I was a child of God. Neither here nor there, I knew I was covered. Being a child of God, you're a child, so you don't know how to receive his message. At least I didn't. Receiving his blessings became more profound for me as I got older, and that was when I realized that God had been waiting for me all along.
So with that, it's true. We went to church. The thing about it is that my parents never talked about the Bible in our home. My mother always mentioned God, and that struck me. It caught my attention. I was afraid at times because she would sit down and write scriptures in a notepad, and I distinctively remember that. Now, I had an aunt that was always talking about God and things like that, but when we went to church, it was like it was just to go to hang around the kids and eat the drink the milk and eat the cookies and things like that, because I was so consumed with the violence in my household. It was good to just get out of the house and be around. Not that my parents weren't good natured, they were. They were very good natured people. They just had their issues. But it felt good to be around, you know, other kids. It felt good to be out of the household, out of that house. It felt like it was a house of hell to me. And it just felt good to be in a different environment, a different neighborhood. It felt good to hear different things. And so I never told anybody this. You're the first person I'm talking about this with, what I'm about to mention, is that, and I'll talk about it in my second book, but I was going to my mom sent me to the store one day to get her some cigarettes and some bread. And on my way home, on my bicycle, it was about dusk, so it was probably 5:30, 6 o'clock, I looked into the sky, and I saw some eyes looking at me. And to this day, that's why I don't have a picture of God in my mind. I have his eyes. I don't have his hair, his skin color. I have his eyes in my mind. And this is what I saw when I looked in the sky. It scared me so much that I hopped off my bike. I dropped the bread in the bag that I had in my hand. I went in the house and told my mother. I was breathing deeply. I was scared. I started to cry. She said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Ma, I saw God. I saw his eyes." And she said, "Well, he's just looking out for you. That's all. He wants you to know that he's there for you." Aside from everything I had gone through, the events that had taken place through my childhood with my relatives, aside from my parents fighting, arguing, when I saw God's eyes in the sky, I knew then that I would always be covered. So that goes into me going to the churches just to drink the milk and eat the cookies and hang around with the kids and have fun and laugh. I knew then God would always have me. And to this day, he has had me. There's just the situation I've been in, and I've gotten close to where I was, like, stressed out, my blood pressure's up, and I'm upset, and I'm like, let me remember back when I saw God's eyes. I know he's always there for me. You know, people may not think that he's there, but he's always around. And if you have a relationship with God, which I do, It's not that you don't have to worry, but you still have to do your deed. You have to do your everyday deed in life with your neighbors, your friends, your relatives, whomever. You still have to be a good citizen. You know, even people with issues, even people with addictions like I've had, you know, as long as you try to cleanse your body, cleanse your soul, cleanse your temple, it's going to work for you. You're going to be all right. You're going to come through. So those are the things that I paid close attention to. I knew God had always had my back.
Okay. Now, you said, I may be here much longer than I believe, and if I am, this journey that I'm on will have been well worth it. And when you say, this journey that I'm on, to me, that means that you're saying this mission, this purpose that I have. Is that right? So, you're saying, because you have a purpose, your life has been changed, and changed in a way for the better.
Yes.
Okay.
So, my life has been changed for the better. Here's the thing. You have a path that you can take in life. You can take the left side or the right side. Most people go to where most other people are going because they feel comfortable, because they're surrounded by other people. A lot of people are afraid to go off on their own and really have that deep relationship with God. I was never afraid of that. I've been uncomfortable all my life as a child, so comfort was something that was uncomfortable for me. So my being uncomfortable was the norm for me, and having a relationship with God was at becoming the norm for me. I knew that one day, you know, my journey started a long time ago, and I may not have talked to many people about it. I may not have expressed my theories behind, you know, God, Jesus Christ, and things like that, even the Bible, but I knew deep down inside that I was on a journey to help people. I've always had a good heart. But there was times where I did some bad things, I said some bad things, but I would immediately regret it because I knew it was wrong because I had God in my soul. So whenever I did something wrong, it wasn't just a thought, it was a feeling. If I said something wrong, immediately the feeling would come over me. I would start to shake, I would start to sweat, I would worry, and I said, you know, I have to do my best to make up for this. You know, so either just a couple of things I could do, stop doing it. You know, I can apologize, I can repent, I can go back home and sit in the corner and talk to God. I knew what I had to do, and that's part of my journey. That's part of this healing process that I'm going through. And it's been a daily thing, and I really enjoy it. But, you know, my purpose in life has always been to give back and help people, you know, talk to people, listen to people. It's always been to be fair, and I haven't always been fair. But if I wasn't fair, I would feel it again. I got that feeling all over my body. You know, you didn't do that right. That was wrong. You shouldn't have said that. So my journey and my purpose have been intertwined since I was a kid. It took me time to mature and really understand it. But I always had an idea of where I was going with it. So that's what helped me out when I knew what was going on at a year of early age. Even though I didn't practice it all the time, it helped me. The fact that I knew that, you know, who I was and who I was, how close I was to God, really helped me out.
You said in your book that many people say everything happens for a reason. Now, would you expand upon that and tell us what you think about the reason for things happening?
So what I think about the reason for things happening is a true test of who you really are spiritually, who you really are as far as a child of God. It's always going to be a test. And if some people fail the test because they want, you know, even more so now than any time, they want instant gratification instead of standing the test of time and understanding that this is part of this disruption of your journey, of your path. You're going to be dealt some bad hands. You're going to be dealt some tough times. But you can't expect things to be easy for you every day because you have to be built up. You have to be resilient. You have to be strong. You have to be strong-willed if you're going to consider yourself part of God, which he was a very strong, strong-willed, spiritual, loving, caring, powerful person. Based on what he went through, we should all expect to go through that to get to the journey, to continue this journey, get to the promised land, which is heaven. It's not going to come easy. It doesn't come easy. So that's where I keep in my mind, you know, everything happens for a reason. You're going to be tested every single day. You're going to be tested on your resolve, on your your ability to withstand, you know, hard times, rough times, your ability to look somebody in the face and say, hey, regardless if you don't like me, I know you talked about me, but I still love you as my brother or my sister. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, Puerto Rican, Mexican, it doesn't matter. Everything happens because you're being tested. Everything happens because it's a part of your soul to get to the other end. You don't just wake up one day and do some things and a couple of good things and then, you know, you may pass away and you go to heaven. You have to make sure you have to make sure that your soul, you have to make sure that your body, your mind, and spirit are ready for that. You know, look at the journey that God took. Look at how tough it was for him. People crucified him. People didn't believe in him. People talked about him. Yet, he kept going. And that's what I look at. Even though if I wake up in the morning, I have a tough day, you know, my electricity may be off for whatever reason, you know, because I didn't pay the bill, or I didn't think right, or I didn't plan properly, or I didn't do what I was supposed to do, things are going to happen. You know, it's trials and tribulations, give and take. You know, that's the way I look at it. You have to be able to stand the test of time and be willing to go through the fire, be willing to go through the hard times to get to that other end that's, you know, laid out for everybody. Not just one person, it's for everybody. But those that don't make it are the ones that chose not to make it, and those who chose not to work hard to take the same path, the same journey that God did. You're going to have to deal with some pain. You're going to have to deal with some letdown. You're going to have to deal with some agony. Everything is not meant for us to get everything when we want it right now. You have to make sure you are intrusive enough in your own life and paying attention to other people's lives so that you can come together and work together and come together as a common bond, you know, to make sure that we're, you know, assisting each other in our journey. And a lot of people don't do that. That's when you have those sins start coming in, with selfishness and greed and lust. Those all play a part. And hey, are you going to be able to make it through this or not? And some people falter to greed. Some people falter to lust and envy, and they never make their way out.
And you said how we think not only affects our own spirit, soul, and body, but it also impacts the people around us. And you said, after God, your mind is the next most powerful thing in the universe. So, my question is this. How do you advise to change your basic thoughts about things when they're not correct or not doing you any good, so that you can have a more powerful effect on the people around you?
Well, first of all, you have to realize that when things are not going well, when things are not going in your favor, you can't expect them to always go in your favor. Once you realize that you're in the vein to help people, you're going to have to be the strongest person, and it could be in a group of average people. You know, you're going to have to be that person that takes on this role, that takes on the ability to keep people steered in the right direction. You have to be that person that knows when, hey, this is dangerous, we need to move away from that. You have to be that person that's aware of all of your surroundings. You know, one of the key things in this is knowing the people that you're around, knowing their personality. You know, God was a leader. He was a leader. So when you become a leader, whether you're a husband, a father, an uncle, a godfather, a grandfather, when you become a leader, you have to understand the people that you're leading. You have to understand their personality. You have to understand their wants, their needs, their desires, their likes, their dislikes. If you don't know those things about those people, you're going to lead somebody down the wrong path or down the wrong trail. And that's when people start becoming hurt and injured and not want to be around anymore. So the thing is, you have to understand the people that you lead, the people that you're around. You have to be very giving. You have to be prepared to be a servant leader. And some people in this world are just leaders because they want to lead their own company. They're greedy. They want the money. They want the products. They want the products to get out off the assembly line quick enough. They want people to buy it. They want people to make them feel better. They want people to make their life more worthy. Instead of sitting down, slowing down, thinking about, hey, how can I make the people that I'm with, how can I make them better? How can I make their lives better? You know, how can we move forward in harmony? How can we move forward and affect other people in a positive way. And that's how you build large groups of happy, you know, great-hearted, good-natured people. And if you're selfish, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen at all. So my thing is making sure that you know about, you know, the people that you're surrounded by. Make sure you're familiar with them. If you're not, you get to know them. We're all familiar with family members, but what are you going to do when you're around people that you're not familiar with, when you don't know, when somebody's new? You have to care about, you have to be willing to care about any, everybody. Not just your loved ones, not just your kids, not just your husband, not just your wife. You have to be willing to care passionately about everybody that comes into your circle, everybody that comes into, you know, into your life. You have to be willing to accept them, just like God accepted us. You know, and just like, you know, the wedding vows, for better, for worse, good or bad, you know, except until death do us part. You know, ups and downs. You have to be that person that's willing to stand in there and deal with it and weather the storm. Some people can't do it. Some people are selfish. Some people don't want to give back. Some people don't want to be a servant. But if you take that role and you're in that vein, that's what you better plan to do, and you better maintain it.
Leon, you said, and this is a true statement, we lie, cheat, and deceive to make those around us feel better about us or better about being around us. Well, since that's the case, what would you say when someone starts to lie, cheat, or deceive?
Well, the biggest thing you need to do, the first thing is that once you realize it, you have to have that conversation. Don't put them down. Don't hold it against them, because 10 times out of 10, that person already knows that they're lying, cheating, and stealing, and deceiving you. They know. They just think that you don't know. And the most important thing to do is say, hey, man, or hey, lady, you know, this is what I heard you say, or this is what I thought you said, or this is what you've done. Can we discuss this for a moment? I had a problem with discussing things. You know why I had a problem with discussing things with you? Because I knew already that they had caught me. Even though I knew that they had caught me lying, deceiving, I still try to fight my way out of it and throw the blame back on them. I still continue to lie and lie and lie. But the best thing you can do is to sit down, slow the emotions down, you know, make it quiet, turn off the music, turn off the TV, and look each other in the eye and say, hey, let's move forward with this. You're better than that. I'm better than that. You know, let's not lie to each other. Let's not deceive each other. Let's not hurt each other. And had I done that years ago, had I been, you know, familiar with how to do that, because I wasn't familiar with how to do that. I grew up in that environment. They say you're a product of your environment. I truly was. Not only that, but I didn't correct it. You could be a product of your environment, but you can make correction. I never made the correction. So I carried the lying and the deceiving and the stealing on into my adulthood. And when somebody would face me with it, when somebody would challenge me with it, I would get upset. The first thing I'd do was get upset, because being upset was like, it was a coping mechanism for me. It was a matter of protecting myself from it. But not only that, when I got upset, I had became closer to the devil and less closer to God. So there was no way of fixing that. Either our friendship was severed forever, or I stayed angry, or I just kept lying to that person. But the best thing you can do is say, hey, slow down. Maybe I'm wrong, but this is what I'm thinking. You know, I'm not accusing you of anything. Make it clear to the person, because people get defensive real quick, and they sort of guard real fast. They do. So the best thing to do is communicate. Hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I heard. I don't know if I'm right or wrong. Can you help me out? And let's talk about this. And it's not going to be just the first time. You're going to have to talk about that issue, whatever it is, two or three times. Because that person that's doing the lying and deceiving, they've probably been doing it for a long time. And they've probably never been caught, or never been called to the carpet, or nobody said, you know, call them or say, hey, you know, I don't, this doesn't seem right. You know, I don't like it. I don't get that feeling. So when you lie, your body feels it. When you lie, when you deceive, your spirit feels it. And not only does your body and spirit and your mind feel it, but it shows in your body language. It shows in your eye. You can't look a person in the eye and lie without it showing some kind of way. So that's why I said that part.
Right, right. Okay. You said, I know now. It was given to me by God, and I assume that you mean my purpose or my mission in life. I was chosen as his messenger to those I talked to, and I can identify with that because that's essentially my life. I was given a message, and I try to give it to the people as often as I can. And so tell me about God giving you a purpose in life, because I think that God gives every one of us a purpose. We may never find out what it is, but we have a purpose.
Yeah, so we have a purpose. We do, I'm not disagreeing with you, but we do find out what it is when we're in it, because it comes so naturally, like you. Maybe when you were 15 years old, you may have had some things that happened to you. I don't know. Maybe when you were 18 years old, something else happened, something changed. But the mere fact that you stayed on course, you probably doubted it. You didn't know why. You probably said, well, why, you know, why did we break up or whatever case may be? But you stayed on that course. Some people know at an early age that what their purpose is. That's why you have these young pastors, young ministers, young preachers, you know, and things like that. People that are want to become a bishop at an early age. Just like people want to become a doctor. I've talked to people they knew they wanted to be a doctor at 5 years old. They knew they wanted to be a dentist at 8. They knew they wanted to be a lawyer at 10. But we know our purpose, but we don't call it our purpose. We call it it's our passion. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what I love to do. But we don't use the term purpose often enough. So purpose is when you become closely related to God, because this is my purpose in life. And you'll know when you're in your purpose, you'll start to help people without even thinking twice about it. It doesn't feel like a job. It feels like it's so natural to you. It makes you feel good to get up and say, hey, I'm going to go to church today, or I'm going to go to Bible study. I'm going to teach some kids some things about the Bible today. We're going to go to church, and we're going to talk about the Garden of Eden. We're going to talk about the banks of Jordan. We're going to talk about the Sea of Galilee. And you just get so motivated and fired up about it because that's your purpose. You know, some people have various purposes in life. Some people have two or three. Some people shift change. They shift focus. Some people have mind shifts throughout their life. But the key thing is, you can, like you said, you know your purpose. You found it. But you stayed true to the course. You didn't deviate. You may have been pushed to the right for a little bit or pushed to the left for a day or two or a month, but it came right back to where you were supposed to be. And that's when we know our purpose, because we not only speak it, but we feel our purpose within our entire soul. And when it comes out so naturally. You don't have to practice what you say. You know that. You don't have to rehearse. If you want to, you can rehearse if you want to, but just say, for instance, you pick 2 days from now, and somebody calls and say, hey, we want you to come and speak. I need you in 5 minutes. You're not going to tell them no, 9 times out of 10. You're going to show up, and it's going to come out naturally. And that's when, you know, people realize that they're in their purpose.
Leon, you said, we all have an innate ability to pierce someone's soul with encouraging words, good thoughts, a warm gesture, and even a simple hello. And you being a motivational speaker, I sense that you do that all the time.
I do.
So
I do my best. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So that's something that we can all do, is have a feeling for other people and their concerns and their pain and their suffering and everything, and try to empathize with them as much as we can and to give them the motivation to continue on.
Well, aside from giving them motivation, I like to give people the ability to tap into their drive. I like to tell people, see, words are very, very powerful. As you know, quick example, a friend of mine a few years ago said, hey, Leon, we're going to do a marathon. I said, okay, great, let's do it. We gave ourselves a year to work out. I didn't work out for that year. So the mere fact that I committed to it, right, and I was honest with my friends, I got the phone call a week before the marathon was upon us, and I said, oh, my God, I didn't run a whole year. I didn't run at all. I didn't run a half a mile. I said, since I committed to doing this with my friends and I'm honest with them and I love my friends, I ran the marathon. But what I found is that the words commitment and honesty and love gave me strength to make it through that marathon, because I could have quit. I could have not shown up. I could have lied. But But yet, I showed up to the marathon, and I found out that I could run 20 miles without even running a mile that year. I could run 20 miles without stopping because I said, you know, I'm going to stay committed to my friends. I'm going to stay honest, and I'm going to continue to love my friends, and I'm going to show up, and I'm going to keep my word. So I kept my word, and I found out that, you know, the words were very powerful for me, and the words gave me strength. My thing is, I like to give people strength. I like to tell people positive things because you have to be very careful. The one moment you tell somebody something negative, that could ruin them for the rest of their life. They can't find a way out of it. But the moment you tell somebody something positive, even if it hurts their feelings, like, hey, this is what I see in you, this is what I think you can do, but you're not doing it right now, why don't you spend another half hour on this? They'll appreciate it even more. You can't just tell people negative things and tear them down. That's not why we're here on this earth. We're here to build each other up. We're here to love each other. We're here to respect each other. My thing is, you know, telling people positive things, giving them drive. Motivation is it's temporary. You can be motivated because you have a beautiful wife or a nice house or a nice car. But once you get used to it, that motivation goes away. You have to remain driven. You have to find your, again, it ties into your purpose in life. This is my purpose. You know, I may not want to get up today and say anything positive right now, but I'm going to do it anyway. And then, you know, you find out that you need to continue doing that. But I like to give people not only drive and purpose and remind them of the purpose, but I like to give people determination and make them stronger, make them strong-willed, make them dig down deeper in their soul and pull things out that they didn't think that they had. Because I do it for myself.
The next point that I want to talk about is probably the most important single point that I could make, and you talk about it in your book. The problem with our society and our country and the world is that the churches are mute and Satan is screaming on every corner. And the problem is that Satan gets what he wants done by being invisible. And most people don't even believe that Satan exists. And he likes to keep it that way. He will lie and tell you that what he's proposing for you to do will be fun and good for you and all that kind of stuff. And he doesn't want to attract any attention. So that's one of the things that I try to bring out in my message, is that the truth of the matter is there is a God and there is a devil. And they are fighting each other for your life, for your soul. Now, the way that you put it in your book is, there was a time in my life that I didn't believe in God. I truly believed in the devil. He gave me all of the good things that were bad for me. I made myself believe that they were good so that I didn't have any guilt. The devil gave me everything that I craved. He had many faces, so many that at one time I believed he had more faces than God. The world, hell, sin, corruption was what felt like heaven to me. I thought I was having fun, but I was really falling into the depths of sin and dying inside all along. I chose the lies of Satan and spiraled into mental, physical, and spiritual disarray. Leon, that's what's happening to most of the people in the country today.
It is, and it's getting worse, and it's sad. It's getting worse because people, you know why? I'll tell you why. This is just why I think. Because people think they can repent over and over and over again, and they truly believe that they'll be accepted. But if they keep repenting and they keep going back to their bad behavior, all they're doing is solidifying their relationship with the devil and not God. And then when they finally come to grips with it, it's when they have cancer, or their limbs are being removed, or they lose their eyesight, or they lose their family, and they say, wow, now I've hit rock bottom. What do I do now? Then they want to start changing their life. Now I'm not going to say it's too late, but people that you're surrounded by like this, they'll write you off, they don't want to be bothered with you because you've done it over and over and over again. And I was one of those people that kept doing it over and over again, and I was wondering, why am I not thriving in life? Why am I not happy? Because I kept receiving the same bad, devilish behavior, and I didn't give God a chance to open up and come into my life. He's always there for me, but I have to do it first. I have to accept him. I have to do it for myself first. He's got too many people to worry about. You know, and he can't keep worrying about the same person over and over again. He tells you, I told you, son. You know, this is, I'm showing you the right way, but yet you keep going to the left. You keep going to the devil. I'm going to accept you every time you come back. I'm going to bring you back. But you have to pay before you come back over here. You have to. There's a wrath of God. People don't believe it. I believe it. But you have to be willing to go through that to get back to where you're supposed to be. And a lot of people are afraid of that, so they keep going back to those bad behaviors because they have an addiction to that emotion. And that's how I feel about that.
Yes, when you say that you're forgiven from your sins when you repent, there is an element in the word repent that means that you change your ways. Like you said, if you say, I'm sorry I did that, and you keep doing it, you haven't really repented, have you?
Exactly. You haven't.
So,
you use it as an excuse.
So you have to, if something in your life is making your life hell, then, and you want to get out of that, you got to quit doing it.
You have to quit doing it. You have to.
Yeah.
It's you have to quit doing it. You have to. But people don't realize it because they're addicted to that emotion and they like it, but they want to change their ways. But that emotion has more strength over them than it does to break their decision. They continue doing it.
You wrote a few lines of poetry in your book. You said, the devil broke the wrong parts of me. He broke my wings and forgot that I had claws. I am on a journey to heaven. I no longer love the devil's ways. What was coming through to you when you wrote that?
Well, what was coming through to me is the fact that I was having a discussion with the devil, and, you know, you're done with me. I'm done with you. Whether you believe it or not, I'm done with you. I'm still going to continue to fight, regardless of how far down I am. If I'm on my back looking up, like they say, as long as you can look up, you can get up. So what came to me was the fact that I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to stop fighting. I have all these addictions, these vices, but God still gave me the ability to dig in deep and come up out of that hole.
One of the things that you've learned that's made the difference in your life is that you believe that God has given you a mission, a purpose. And you said it this way, what is my reason to live? Search for it. Feel it deeply. When you find it, you will know. You will experience a sensation like a soothing force of lightning that runs through your body with a sense of euphoria. Notice the feeling and then capture that moment with your soul. Keep it and remember it. And then make it your reason to live. Live through it. Apply it. And think it into existence. I thought that was so well written that you crystallized one of the most important things that people need to understand. They have a purpose. Be passionate about it and live it. And your life will improve dramatically.
Yes, you have to, but once you catch it, people have a tendency to forget that moment because it can seem so overpowering, so overwhelming, and it can sometimes seem so too righteous, too good to be true. That's the biggest thing, and they forget about it. It felt so good, it felt so wonderful, but, you know, I'm not ready for that. They become afraid because some people are afraid to be mature. I was one of those people that were afraid to be mature and totally accept God in my life because I said, you know what? If I step out of my life, I can't continue to do the bad things in life. I can't continue to be upset and hurt people's feelings and talk people any kind of way I want to. But they become addicted to that emotion, and it's a bad emotion. It's a sad emotion. It's an evil emotion. But once you get that feeling through your core, through your body, through your spirit, you hold on to it. And you never forget it. You want to go back to that. So what did you do? What were you doing at that time when you got that feeling? That's what you need to continue to do. It might have been telling somebody some good news. It might have been hugging somebody. It might have been telling the truth, practicing the truth. It might have been reading the Bible. But you always have to remember that too. Just like you remember a bath feeling, if you touch the stove, you burn your hand. You remember that. You don't want to go back to it. Remembering a good thing, a good feeling, a righteous feeling, a wholesome feeling, it sets us profound in our life. And we have a tendency to forget that because we want to go back to the bad thing.
I'm at the end of your chapter on conclusion, and in the last couple paragraphs, you wrote about something that we've already discussed early in the program, but since it is so rampant in our country and so many people are broken because of it, I want to read what you had to say. You said, "I have a special message for some of my readers, those of you, male or female, who have suffered sexual abuse. I know what you've gone through. I know what you're thinking. I've been there. And most importantly, I know for sure that you can make it through simply because I have. Yes, it was hard, but you can do it. If you've been raped, molested, or something else, know that others have endured similar tragedies. I was once where you are. Although it was a rough, long, tiring road, I made it through, and so can you." Well, that's really good advice, and maybe somebody that's been through that will take that and try to move on. You know, the present is all that you've got. The past has already been done to you, and the future is not here yet. So you need to live in the present and to try to do the best that you can every day.
Every day. That's right. Every single day.
Well, for the last question, I will go back to your questions, and it was, if you could give today's youth one piece of advice, what would it be and why?
I would tell them to believe what you tell yourself, and this is why. You're going to have people that are jealous of you. You're going to have people that don't like you. You're going to have people that want to hurt you. You're going to have people that want to bring you down. You're going to have people that are going to negatively affect you because they know that you listen to them and you believe in them. My life started changing. It all started changing when I started believing in what I was telling myself and not what people were saying to me. I thought, even if I was telling myself things that I thought were impossible to do, once I did it and found out that I can do it, that built my confidence. That built my self-esteem up. So the thing that people were saying, the things that they were saying to me, the things they were doing to me, didn't bother me once I stopped believing what they were telling me. I started believing things that I was telling myself, even if it came to God, if it came in a dream, if it was osmosis. Once you start believing what you tell yourself and you start acting on that and you start doing it, that's going to change you as a person. Other people cannot affect you with that, with the things that they say or the things that they do to you when you start believing in what you tell yourself. And that's why I was able to grow. That's why I was able to become a great leader in the Navy. That's why I was able to become successful. I tried to drive myself insane with work, with hard work and ideas. What I found out two things. First of all, I didn't go insane. And second of all, my results were insane. And people were like, wow, how did you do that? Well, where did you get the ideas from? And that's where it all changed for me. I started believing in what I was telling myself and stopped believing what other negative things that people were telling me. I didn't believe it. Their reality was, their opinion of me was not my reality. So that helped me grow.
Well, Leon, we really appreciate you being on the program today. You've given us some wisdom that we can use in our life to make your life better. And your book is Broken, and I assume it's available on Amazon.com?
Yes, it is. It's available on Amazon.com. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I'm posting motivational videos for people daily or weekly, a few times a week. So they can find me at Leon R. Walker on Instagram and Leon R. Walker on Facebook. But yeah, my book is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble too. And thank you for having me there. I really appreciate it and I enjoy the conversation.
Yeah. And you also have some YouTube videos.
I do, and I'm loading up more as we speak. I have more YouTube videos that I'm loading up. I fell behind on that, but yeah, I'm loading up more on that too, so they can find me on YouTube as well under Leon R. Walker Jr., Leon Walker Jr.
Well, Leon, thank you so much for sharing your story with people all around the world, and I appreciate it, and they appreciate it.
I thank you for having me. It was a wonderful, wonderful conversation. I enjoyed your the dialogue, the way you speak. It just was very inspiring. So thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, have a blessed day.
All right. You have a great day and a blessed day. So thank you.